This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Hi, everyone. So glad you could make it out today. I'm Andy Bunman here. I'm part of the Philip R. Lee Institute for Health Policy Studies, and it's my great pleasure to introduce our speaker today. This is our first symposium for this academic year at the Philip R. Lee Institute for Health Policy Studies, and we have a terrific guest. We have the Executive Director of COVID California, Peter Lee. And I just want to say a couple things by way of introduction. I think you all know that we've had a tremendous opportunity in this country with the passage of the Affordable Care Act in 2010. To expand coverage and to reduce the number of uninsured. But as others have said, the ACA was not self-assembling and self-implementing. It really required someone with vision and creativity to think about how to put the parts together to make sure it worked as envisioned. And we have been just so incredibly fortunate in California, which has been regarded really among states as in the vanguard of doing an outstanding job of not only standing up a state-based marketplace, but in implementing so many of the aspects of the Affordable Care Act, which make coverage more available for people in this country. And we are fortunate that we had, as our visionary leader, Peter Lee, leading the effort at Covered California, our state-based marketplace. Peter really is a central figure in making all of our gains possible. Peter, aside from currently being the executive director at Covered California, also had prior to that served in the Obama administration, where he was a leader in establishing another important aspect of the ACA, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. So he played a central part there, and I know many of you have involvement with some of them as well. And then prior to going to Washington and then coming back to us in California, Peter was also the led the Pacific Business Group on health. So he has played so many important roles in trying to make health insurance work more effectively to expand coverage. And we're just incredibly delighted to have him here today to talk about the Affordable Care Act delivering on the promise, and who better to do it than Peter Lee. So thank you. Please welcome him.
Andy, thank you so much, and it's great to be here. It feels a little bit like a coming home on a number of levels. I did not go to UCSF. I did go to Berkeley. in my very younger years, I spent time here at UCSF when Phil, who is my uncle, was chancellor. And so I used to spend time up in the chancellor's house here at UCSF, and that was the time when the Zodiac Killer was out, and I was terrified back then because I was sure the Zodiac Killer was going to get me, but I survived that, and we will survive the bumps in the road relative to the Affordable Care Act. What I'd like to do is tell you some of what we're doing and provide some context on where California fits in the Affordable Care Act. And in many ways, California really is serving as a model for the nation of how, if a state uses all the tools the Affordable Care Act provides, can make a huge difference. I want to start by noting how we see things and what our mission is at Covered California. It's the classic Berwickian triple aim. Better care, healthier people, and lower costs. And not just for the 1.3 million people that are insured through Covered California, but through all Californians. And I'll say some about why, but we are at a place in the healthcare ecosystem where people come in and out of Covered California. If we don't change the entire delivery system, if we don't make healthcare costs lower for everyone, we're all going to be toast. So we think about these issues every day. Are the people that are getting coverage getting the right care at the right time? Are they being kept healthier? And are we lowering costs? That's our driving goal all the time. How do we do that? Well, we are a very active purchaser. And I'll tell you what that means. We go through this. Is that we don't just say, any health plan, come on and we'll offer you, which is the case in most of the country. So when you hear about the federal marketplace, the federal marketplace, which has 36 states, and most state-based exchanges say any health plan that wants to be in that state can be in their exchange. That's not what we do. We reject some plans, we take others. We have requirements that I'll tell you about. We need to offer affordable products. We've been remarkably successful at that. We need to make sure we get people enrolled. We've been remarkably successful at that. But finally, it's not just about getting people an insurance card. It's about making sure people get the right care at the right time. And I appreciate with Andy and Claire meeting with some of the UCSF's team. We are just starting the process of understanding better, are we delivering on that promise? But the promise is one of care, not just coverage. So I'm not going to go through all these, but I do want to remind you that the Affordable Care Act isn't just about marketplaces and Medicaid expansion. And importantly, I mean, I've spent a lot of my life representing large employers, being a consumer advocate. The Affordable Care Act has changed dramatically health insurance in America for the future. Health insurance, up until 5 years ago, was a game of avoiding sick people. That's how insurance companies made money. They developed benefit design and pricing to get people who are healthy and avoid sick people. They could turn them away. The Affordable Care Act said a number of things. First, you can no longer, as an insurance company, turn people away because of their health status. But it also said, if you get sicker people, we're going to take money from a health plan that got healthier people and give that money to you, the other health plan, risk adjustment. It also said things like young adults on your parents' policies up till 26. It also said no lifetime maximums. It also said caps on what insurance companies can spend not on health care, medical loss ratios. This is a dramatic change that, in essence, with the Affordable Care Act, health insurance has become a regulated utility. That's a very different world than it was 5 years ago. So health insurance has changed dramatically besides the fact of subsidies that are offered in Medicaid expansion and through subsidies in marketplaces. So I want to spend a moment for Cover California provides subsidies, okay, to help people pay for coverage. I want to remind now, many of you are either faculty or students here. Everyone in America has federal tax support to get health insurance. If you have employer-based coverage, a substantial portion of that is supported by a federal tax subsidy. It's invisible to people, but it's about 20% of what the insurance premium is. Now, people often say, why are we giving free handouts in these form of subsidies to help people get coverage? What the Affordable Care Act does is for people in the individual market that did not otherwise have insurance is to give them the same leg up that all Americans had had up till then. And that's just a reminder note that we haven't, with the Affordable Care Act, done something revolutionary and new. Rather, we're affording to all Americans what most have had up till now, which is through employer-based care, providing a federal tax subsidy to help get insurance. Now, we provide, for people that don't have employer-based care, a similar subsidy through a tax credit. And what we have now, which is different, which didn't exist before, is a penalty if you don't get coverage. Now, that penalty ramps up. It's going to be 2.5% of your income starting next year, a substantial penalty. But the reason people don't get health insurance isn't because they aren't penalized. It's because they can't afford it. And the Affordable Care Act addresses that directly by providing very substantial subsidies to make it affordable or to expand Medicaid. So what's happened in America? Now, these blue states are not Democratic states. These are states that have not expanded, have expanded Medicaid. They end up looking very similar. So I think it's really important. We talk about the Affordable Care Act. Two things were done to expand coverage. Number one, allowed states to expand their Medicaid program. California has done that, and in doing that, expanded coverage dramatically. About 25 states expanded Medicaid. About 30 states have not. Every state have marketplaces for people that are above Medicaid eligibility to get tax credits that they can use to buy a private plan. Okay, California did both. But I think it's so important to note nationally, over 20 million Americans have insurance today that probably wouldn't otherwise, half of them through expansion of Medicaid, and half through marketplace expansion. Now, much of the South, Florida, Texas, have chosen not to expand their Medicaid programs. There are millions of Americans that do not have health insurance today in those states because of the states, to my mind, playing politics with their people and saying, because we want to hold things out as anti-Obamacare, et cetera. But there are millions of Americans that are not able to avail themselves of expanded coverage because the states have not expanded Medicaid. California is one of the many that have, and our state has benefited dramatically because of that. So let's talk about California now. Now, the left-hand side is before the Affordable Care Act. Over 5 million uninsured, about 9 million in Medi-Cal, 1.5 million individual market. After the Affordable Care Act, we've cut the uninsured about in half. Okay, about 2.8 million currently uninsured. About half of them, though, are undocumented or otherwise ineligible for Medicaid or Cover California. We still need a safety net. We still need community clinics, et cetera. We've seen huge growth in the Medicaid program. Medicaid in California now covers about 1 in 3 Californians under the age of 65. Grew by about 3 million people. Covered California has about 1.3 million insured. And in the individual market, not in Covered California, because they're not eligible for subsidies, about 1 million people, 900,000. So we've changed healthcare in California, but we aren't done. 3 million uninsured is a lot of people, and it underscores that we still need a safety net because many of those are not going to be eligible. And it also underscores that getting people to move from what has been, we call a culture of coping, of people making do to say, oh my God, I can have coverage, isn't something that happens overnight. In about 2 months, we're moving to our third open enrollment year. We've gone through two rounds of open enrollment, to get about 1.4 million. New people every month come into being eligible for coverage because they lose job-based coverage, et cetera. That's always going to happen. But we have totally transformed health insurance in California. And I think we need to give a huge kudos to the governor, Jerry Brown, and the legislature that said, of course, we're going to expand Medicaid. That's not cheap. There is a huge federal match, but there's still dramatic expense to the general fund. Covered California, when we were founded, we were actually established when Governor Schwarzenegger was here. So it was a Republican governor, Democratic legislature that said, yeah, we want to do this Affordable Care Act thing. We'll set up a marketplace. But you can never use general fund money for your operations. So Covered California gets zero state money. We are funded in startup with funding from the federal government. And as of this next year, we'll be running 100% on a very small assessment on premiums on all the plans that go through Covered California. But we actually, as part of our legislative authority, are barred from ever using state tax dollars. The history of our state wrestling with budget issues are still there. We are totally independent of the tax dollars of the state. Okay. How big are we? Well, we are now quite big. So we may be relatively small when you look at the whole state, but Covered California is now the second largest purchaser of health care for those under 65. The only one bigger than us is Medi-Cal. We are now larger than CalPERS for those under 65. We have over, at this point, 1.4 million covered lives, about $6, $7 billion a year going through us. And the important piece of that is to note that we are a very big buyer. So health plans actually listen when we talk. They care about our enrollment. They care about getting people in. But it's also important to note that 1.8 million people have been served by us since we opened our doors. About 500,000 are not covered by us today. They now have employer-based coverage or in Medi-Cal. We will always have significant churn or turnover, which means one of our key issues is always going to be continuity of care. What happens when someone moves from Medi-Cal into Covered California or from Covered California into employer-based coverage? We will never have a static population. That's what the individual market is. So let me talk briefly about enrollment. So how have we done? And many of you have heard stories about this, but California is the most diverse state in the nation. We're also the biggest. you look at our subsidy eligible population, 38% Latino, biggest population by far, 34% white, 21% Asian Pacific Islander, 5% African American. Well, at the second open enrollment, who'd we enroll? Well, 37% Latino, 18% Asian Pacific Islander, 4% African American. Not exactly, but incredibly close. I mean, we've done a very good job enrolling Californians by income, age, ethnicity. And how do we do that? We did that by anchoring on enrollment in every community in the state, doing outreach in language, outreach that was anchored in work by insurance agents, by community group, by faith-based organizations, was remarkably effective. And it's not over. This next year, we have a total budget of about $330 million, one-third of which will be spent on advertising, marketing, and community outreach. That's $100 million. We're a big state. It costs a lot to advertise here. It costs a lot to do social marketing, to do community-based outreach. We will need to do this forever because, again, one-third of the population turns over every year. And we've got a program which is anchored in making sure we reach out to what is a very diverse state. So what's that mean in terms of what we've offered? Well, 2014, our first year out, we offered 10 health plans. We renewed them in 2015. And this shows the plans are Anthem, Blue Shield, Chinese Community, Health Net, Kaiser, et cetera. Last year, we had a rate increase of 4.2%. That compares to what had been double-digit rate increase in the individual market for the prior, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. Incredibly good. Well, 2016, coming up this next year, the average rate increase is 4%, lower than it was last year. This is remarkably good. And why is it good? It's good because the enrollment was good. The health plans do not plan on losing money on our business. The health plans rated their premiums based on the risk mix we brought in. And I want to, you know, tip my hat to Andy Beinman and the team here who helped us in our negotiating with the plans, where we don't just pound on a table. We show them data. We say, look at the risk mix. Look at the age. Look at the health status. They're actually pretty damn healthy. And we sit down over a period of weeks and negotiate with the health plans on rates, but also on what they're offering in terms of quality, access, and a range of other factors that we're seeing in California among the lowest increases in the entire nation. Now, when you read stories of double-digit premium increases in other states, these are states that do not play the role of an active purchaser. They don't use data. They don't do the focused marketing that we've done. And they don't hold the plans to account to make sure they deliver on the care they're supposed to. They rely on their state regulators, which hopefully do a good job. We partner with our state regulator, but we don't just leave it to the regulators. We think it's part of our job as a purchaser on behalf of our consumers to both get a good deal on price and make sure they're delivering quality care. But that core pillar of offering affordable products, the starting point of premium is going remarkably well. The other piece of affordability isn't just at what the premiums are. It's what your benefit designs and what you offer. One of the things Cover California does, which is different than most of the rest of the nation, is we have standardized benefit design, which means if you're one of the enrollees in Cover California and you're here in San Francisco and picking between Kaiser, Chinese Community Health Plan, and Blue Shield, your choice is one of network design and health plan's philosophy, not bizarre tweak of coinsurance and deductible. Identical benefit design. Okay. And number two, when you look at these benefit designs, I know there's a small print that you can't read, but you can look at this when you get a printout, one of the big barriers for many consumers to get access to care is deductibles. So you hear a lot about high deductible plans, and at Silver, which is the level of benefit design that is sort of core basic, about 70% of the people pick it, there is a, for a family, for an individual, a $2,200 out-of-pocket deductible. Well, there's no deductible that needs to be satisfied in Cover California at Silver for any outpatient care. So if you're deciding whether or not to go see a doctor because you think you've got a flu or you've got whatever, you don't need to think, oh, I need to spend $2,200 before that's going to be covered. The deductible doesn't count until you get to a hospital. That's not the case in most of the nation. Rather, having a design that is standardized means consumers can both make better choices, and we develop standard designs that encourage people to get care at the right time. The other thing you'll see is the forms of subsidies that the Affordable Care Act has in play take two forms. Okay, one is reducing your premium. And so it's what's called the Advanced Premium Tax Credit. I try to not speak in acronyms, and I think I've done that so far, but it's the APTC, which means basically if you are you make $20,000 and your premium is, say, $250, the tax credit will cover 80% of that, and you might be required to spend $40. The feds pick up the rest as a tax credit. That tax credit is actually sent directly to your health plan. So you write a check for 40, the feds write a check for the balance directly to the plan you chose. That's one of the forms of the subsidy. Okay. The other form of the subsidy, though, is to lower your cost sharing. So if you make what is less than 150% of poverty, which I don't remember the number, is about $18,000, you not only have very little premium, but your cost sharing is supported. So what does it mean when you go see a doctor? You pay $3 for an outpatient visit. $3, that's it. That's a bus ride. That's less than a coffee at Starbucks. And you have zero deductible. You make a little bit more, your office visit copay is $15. You make a lot more and still eligible for a subsidy, your office visit would be $40. But that subsidy is anchored in the concept that access to care is driven by burden of dollars. People having a bigger dollar barrier, they aren't going to get care. Recognizing that, we set up standard benefit designs and allocate those subsidies to encourage people to get the right care at the right time. So what's this mean in actually what people have chosen? And it's actually remarkably good news that we need to understand more about, though. So of Covered California's enrollment, about a quarter picked bronze. That's the lowest cost plan. There's something cheaper called catastrophic, but I won't talk about that right now. Few people pick it. But the bronze coverage in Covered California, you can see your doctor 3-4 times a year without being subject to a deductible, but it's basically a high deductible plan. 24% of our insureds pick that. About 70% pick silver, but there's not one silver, because if you're the lowest income eligible for silver, which is what we call that enhanced 94, 200,000 people are eligible for a silver product that means going to the doctor costs them $3 for an office visit. They have zero deductible. 200,000 Californians. And most of them are paying less than $50 a month for that coverage. Some paying less than $25 a month. Now, of those people that pick that bronze coverage, many take their premium subsidy, which is anchored in the silver premium, and can use it to buy a cheaper plan, which means they are getting bronze coverage for free, or a dollar a month. So consumers are making rational choices to pick what are good values for them, and we're trying to steer them to make the best choice possible. But you look at the two elements of affordability, of what does it cost, where we have almost 80% of those that have subsidies paying less than $150 a month per individual, and we have many paying less than $10 a month for their coverage. And when they get coverage, many are in these silver products where it costs them very little to get access to care. We are actually making care truly affordable and access truly accessible. I want to talk some about the value of standard benefit designs, because we in California can forget how different the world is outside of our borders. So this is what I call our tale of three cities. I'm a big believer in standardization. I'm also a big believer in markets and competition. But there's been a lot of work done by behavioral economics that says more choice is not better for consumers. And there's actually fascinating studies about important issues like jams and preserves. If you put 35 jams and preserves, people don't pick any. You put 5, they'll pick one. Well, L.A. We have 6 health plans offering 7 different silver products. That's it. They're standard products. Every one of them, you have outpatient care not subject to deductible. You want to go see a doctor in a silver plan in L.A.? Whether you pick Molina, L.A. Care, Kaiser, you have no deductible when you go see your doctor. Okay? Let's take you to Denver. Denver has 8 different health plans that offer 35 different silver products. Now, what are the differences between these products? Different co-insurance, different co-pays, different deductibles. 15 of those products, you don't get any coverage for outpatient care until you've met your entire deductible, which may be a $3,500 deductible. So you may think, I'm going to buy the cheap plan by premium, and when you need to get care, you've got to be out of pocket $3,000 before you get anything covered. In Miami, 6 health plans offering 33 different products, 5 of which you need to meet your entire deductible before you can get access to care. Now, we looked at this. The other thing that's striking about competition working or not working, and this is, again, worth a lot more research and investigation that I'll plant as a seed for you academics here, is in L.A., the premium range before the tax credit, and this is for a 30-year-old making $30,000, but before the APTC, is $200 to $260. That's a pretty tight range, like $60 spread. Compare that to Denver, $180 to $360, a 2x range. Now, do consumers know what they're getting, the difference? And this is all, remember, these are all silver plans with the same actuarial value. This is not comparing a silver and a gold or a platinum plan. Same thing in Miami, $240 to $460. Same actuarial value. And to my mind, this is insurers basically playing to last year's market, thinking that they're in the game of risk selection. They're selling different benefit designs, they're doing different risk mix. It is not helping consumers. It's not helping people get better access to care. And it's one of the things that I think we as a nation need to be looking at for standardization, learning from what we're doing in California. This then runs to examples of, to my mind, the Denver horror story. And I've shared this with the folks in Colorado, and they actually agree. They would rather they be an active purchaser. They need legislative authority to do that. In Denver, if you are that 30-year-old who wants to pick the cheapest health plan available to you, you pick that good old Bison Flex plan, which gets you the lowest premium, but you need to spend $3,900 out of pocket before you get any benefits covered except for generic medications. And that is not a bait and switch intentionally, but when you think about what that means for people getting access to the right care at the right time, it's a very scary thing. And this is one of the issues I think we need to look at across the nation about learning from what California's done to say, what is the benefits of standardization? How does that help consumers make better choices, but also make sure people are getting the right care at the right time? One of the things that's fascinating, this is, I noted what California's enrollment was, about 25% in bronze, 65 silver. It's a little different than the earlier slide, but this is subsidy and non-subsidy. It's a little different. What happened in Denver? And this is actually Colorado enrollment. 42% of people in Colorado selected bronze. Now, I can tell you that a lot of those people that picked bronze in Colorado were eligible for not just the premium support, but also lowering their cost sharing. But that's only available if they pick a silver plan. By picking the cheap bronze plan, they left on the table federal tax support to lower their out-of-pocket cost because they were confused. Now, a colleague and friend of mine, Ian Morrison, who is a great health futurist, thinks it's because they've legalized marijuana in Colorado. And thinks it's entirely because, yo, dude, let's go with a cheap plan. I don't think that's it. I think it's consumer confused. I don't attribute it only to legalized marijuana. But then you look at Miami. And in Miami, a lot more people pick silver. A lot fewer pick platinum and gold. I don't know what's happening there. But people are not making informed decisions. You know, I don't think Californians' mix is the ideal mix. But boy, do I think people in Colorado are making uninformed decisions. Boy, do I think people in Miami are making uninformed decisions and bad trade-offs because of not having standard benefit designs. So this is some of the examples of what California is doing as an active purchaser. Isn't just working with the plans to get better rates and better products. It's also making sure that consumers have information to make better choices. So let me talk a little bit about access to care. Because one of the big issues for us is we're now 2 years in, and I often say that we are not just about getting people an insurance card. You know, our end game is that triple aim: better care, healthier people, lower cost. So are people getting the right care at the right time? Now, on some levels, we won't really know the answer to that for another year or so. And we're doing a major analytic initiative of taking the data from all of our plans to look at, are diabetics getting the right care at the right time if you're an X plan, if you're X income level. But we have early indicators that are incredibly promising. And this is data from Kaiser Family. And they surveyed California consumers who were in employer-based coverage, in Medi-Cal, and in Cover California, and asked them first, on the left-hand side, could you find a regular source of coverage near you, in your community? Well, 91% of people with employer-based care said they could find care in their local community. Exactly the same for people in Covered California. Now, I mean, I love that. We get headlines all the time, and I can imagine the headline now. 9% Covered California enrollees cannot find local care. You know, and literally, often stories that are about the Affordable Care Act focus on elements that are system-wide issues with only looking at a piece of the system. The good news is 91% of our enrollees are finding care accessible, local to them. Do we need to think about the other 9%? Absolutely. Is it the same issues that people with employer-based care are facing? Absolutely. Similarly, on use of medical services, on the right-hand side is access to both preventive services or general medical services. And access to preventive care, whether people are in Medi-Cal, Covered California, employer-based care, the rates of access to preventive care are statistically identical. Different for people without insurance. This is great news. This is the fact that getting insurance, whether you're in Medi-Cal, Covered California, or employer-based coverage, people are getting access to what is now one of the other changes in the Affordable Care Act. Everyone has access to free preventive services every single year. People are getting it across the board. So these are early indicators that our push and hold to account of the health plans to make sure that folks are getting the right care at the right time is happening. It's something we'll be looking a lot more at in the months and years to come, but early indicators are very positive. Next, I want to note about what we're doing beyond today. With me here is our medical director, Lance Lang. We are the only health exchange in the nation that has a medical director. Now, we're bigger than most other exchanges, given that. But by being an active purchaser that says we aren't just looking at a dollar bottom line, we're looking at a triple aim bottom line, it means when we sit down with the plans, we talk as much about quality, as much about disparities of care, health equity, about provider networks, as we talk about rates. And having Lance at the table with us when we sit down with them, and when we're sitting with them, on the other side of the table is not just their actuary, it's their chief medical officer. It's their leads for a very important line of business. And we have requirements in our contract and are looking at what are they doing to promote integrated care, to promote telehealth, address health disparities, give consumers better tools. We have, and I actually love our contract. I'm kind of wonky that way. But Attachment 7 to our contract is great reading. And it goes through a whole range of elements that health plans need to deliver on. So being an active purchaser isn't just saying, let's keep rates low. It's a matter of what are you as a health plan doing to make sure that a very diverse state, which you're enrolling, are now getting care when they need it. So this is one of the things that we're very excited about. Now, this is very small print. You can read it later. But this goes into more detail on this Attachment 7 of what are you doing today and tomorrow to build a delivery system, not just for our enrollees, but for your entire book of business? Because remember, one-third of our people are turning over every year. So if you're Anthem and you aren't building systems that treat everyone better, that address lowering costs for everybody, it's going to come back and bite us in the butt next year. So our contract terms aren't just about what our health plans are doing for our enrollees, but it's what they're doing to change the delivery system for everyone they're serving. Finally, I want to note something about other state options, because one of the things that's been in discussion a lot is, well, okay, you all know the Supreme Court decision that came down a month or so ago, which said, yes, the federal marketplace can distribute tax subsidies. That was the most recent upholding of the Affordable Care Act. Many have said, oh, well, maybe there should just be a federal marketplace. That all works. We in California are operating at a scale and at a level of effectiveness that I'll tell you, and I've been a Fed, we have no interest in giving back what we're doing to the federal government. But it's very important to recognize that the marketplace functions are not just about websites. Okay, we've got a very good functioning website. It's getting better every year. Healthcare.gov, as you all know, stumbled in its early days and recovered and is doing a pretty good job. But when you think about what it means to operate a marketplace, there's four functions. One is to operate a website, help people enroll. Now, that doesn't need to be state specific. We do a pretty good one, but you could have a website which is shared by five states or 35 states. Okay, you could jointly do that. Another function is a call center. Where do people go when they have trouble? Now, California is an exception to the rule here again. We actually have employees of Covered California, state employees, about 1,000 of them, who answer our phones. We are the only state in the union, and the feds don't do this. They contract out to a vendor that they go up and down. We have state employees. We hire more people during open enrollment with a vendor, but we believe in actually controlling and maximizing customer service by having people that we've trained that understand what we're doing. But you don't have to do that. You can have a call center that is in one place answering calls from Nevada and New Hampshire, if they're trained well. But there are two things that are, to my mind, state-specific. Marketing outreach is local. You know, in the end, enrollment is about what you do in a local school, in a local community, in a local church with local insurance agents, and advertising is local. You know, the marketing buys we do in San Francisco are different than I would buy if I were selling in Colorado. So marketing outreach is always going to be local. The other thing that's always local is your plan relationships. The health plans in California are different than the plans in Oregon, different than the plans in Nevada. The regulatory structure is different. So to my mind, the two elements that will always be and need to have local sensitivity are the marketing outreach and the plan contracting. So I think as we all look ahead on what's going to happen to the evolution of the Affordable Care Act, I think you're going to see a lot more hybrid models of other states. I mean, California is going to keep doing it all. And we aren't passing off any of this, but other states will say, we'll do the marketing, but we're going to rely on the feds for the IT. But we're going to do these people. And I think you're going to see a lot more mix of these. California is at a scale that we don't need to carve it up. We're doing a pretty good job on all fronts, and we're going to keep on doing it. With that, here's some website information, and I'm thrilled to have, I think, a bunch of time to take questions and comments. Thank you very much.
Hello, Annette Gardner here at UCSF, and you know, I'm still celebrating, by the way. I think this is great news, so you did it right. I had a question about the mix of plans, and you've got LA Care, you've got private insurers, and what difference does that make to your negotiations?
It's a great question. So, you know, one of the things that often gets covered is that 90% of the enrollment is in four big plans, which is Kaiser, Blue Shield, Anthem, and HealthNet. But really importantly, healthcare is local. So we very specifically reached out to want to get where we could Medi-Cal plans like LA Care, Molina, which has a history enrolling people in Medi-Cal. We wanted plans where people that went in and out of Medi-Cal would have as little disruption as possible, number one. And number two, in a number of communities, there are regional plans which have deep anchors in their community. San Francisco, Chinese Community Health Plan. In Sacramento, Western Health Advantage. In San Diego, Sharp. in many of those communities, those local plans have very significant enrollment. When you average it out statewide, it's not very big, but Sharp has, you know, I think 15-20% of the enrollment. It's a big deal for them, and it's a big deal for those communities. So we have been very committed to having health care that is local. And so right now in L.A., depending on which part of L.A. you're in, you'll have as many as 7 health plans to choose from. In 2016, there isn't any part of the state you will not have 3 plans, which is great. That's part of our addition of plans. When we added plans for 2016, we wanted to make sure that people had at least 3 plans to choose from. But how much do we go beyond 7? I'm not sure. I mean, we're wrestling with this because we don't think more is always better. But we do think locally anchored plans and plans that have demonstrated core competency of serving some of our population and addressing that continuity issue is critical. So that's part of our rationale for seeking to have in Medi-Cal plans and having locally anchored plans. And we'd like to have more of the Medi-Cal plans in. But the Medi-Cal plans, as many of you know, they've had huge expansion to deal with, and their plates have been pretty full. So many of them have said, give us a few years to digest this huge growth they've had, including expanding to duals. So I expect that in the future years we'll have more of those plans coming in as well. Thanks. Let's go over here, sir.
Hello, my name is Gregory Cochran. I'm an attorney in private practice in San Francisco, a healthcare attorney. My question is about account payer organizations, and I was wondering if you have an idea to what extent your beneficiaries and your health plans are offering care through account ACOs, and sort of what percentage roughly is that business today?
Love the question. So, so accountable care organizations is one of the sort of, you could say, not products of, but animals that is being fostered by the Affordable Care Act generally through Medicare, et cetera. And it's one of the elements in our contracting. Plans are required to tell us which of our enrollees are in ACOs, which are, we're still counting that up. I don't know what the number is. It's not that much right now. But I note that it's a place that we will likely in 2017 be raising the bar and starting to say, thou shalt have a certain percentage either in patient-centered medical homes or accountable care organizations, structures with shared risk and demonstrated care integration. That's an element of raising the bar. In our first few years, we've been in what I'd call a show-me mentality. Tell us what you're doing, and we'll be raising the bar. We don't have the numbers right now, do we, Lance? We don't right now. But we're sort of collecting those numbers now. We'll be looking at them. I will note, though, that the 2 plans we added for 2016. One was United Healthcare, and we added them in 5 regions that we needed additional plans. And then the other is a plan called Oscar, which is a new startup plan. But part of offering them, and they're only in Southern California, is their contract is basically solely with an ACO, Providence Healthcare. So it's an insurer with a wraparound on an ACO. And we love that model. So we're looking to promote that as much as possible.
I'm Lizzie Johns. I am a guest here today with a special interest in health information exchange between providers and consumers. I have 2 questions. My first is, with respect to COVID California, what are you doing to promote and ultimately ensure patient participation in their own care with a special reference to electronic health exchange? And my second question is a little bit more wonky. Do you think that national health plans like Blue Cross and Blue Shield are cross-subsidizing their California rates by having the kind of plans like they have, like you mentioned, in Colorado and Florida, where there are huge deductibles so they don't have to pay anything until people are really sick?
I'll do those backwards. First, on cross-subsidy, I don't think there's any cross-subsidy relative to California in or out. We look really closely at the premium dollars collected, how those dollars are spent here, and it is our dollars being spent, and we look at everything from the profit margins, et cetera. And so one of the side notes as a wonk issue, you know, there's a lot of good discussion, I think, and focus on pharmaceutical pricing and pharmaceutical profit margins. Interestingly, our 12 health plans have an average profit margin of 1.1%. The average profit margin of the pharmaceutical industry today is about 25%. Some of the pharmaceutical companies have profit margins of 50 to 80%. Those profits are baked into the premiums of health plans. So that's off topic, but it's sort of cross-subsidy is that the premiums that we pay are cross-subsidizing huge pharma profits more than they're cross-subsidizing plans, interdepartmental transfers. In terms of what are we doing in terms of promoting patient information sharing with providers, again, some of the things in our attachment 7 is exactly to call for the plans to tell us what they're doing to ensure engaged patient decision-making, shared decision-making, shared information. And that's an area right now where we've invested in choosing wisely in an effort to give consumers information about particular treatments, et cetera. And right now it's been largely at a show-me stage where we're going to be looking at 2017 and 18 more than a show-me to say a thou shalt. But it's an area that we think is critically important. We think, you know, we are all about being patient-centered and patients being the center of what we do. Thanks, Lucy.
Alexis Chetier, and a PhD student in health policy here at UCSF. So I just want to thank you. It's been wonderful to hear about what's happening in Covered California. So my question has to do with informed consumers. I read recently that something like 60% of healthcare consumers can't define a deductible versus a copayment versus. So I wonder if Covered California has looked at partnering with anybody in private industry that offers tools that allow consumers to be more informed in terms of navigating their benefits structure. And I come across a couple. There's CastLightHealth.com or Strive Benefits. There's some out there.
Well, a couple things. Is it? It's interesting. Some of the surveys we've seen, and actually Kaiser Family asked people how much our consumers thought they understood their benefits, and about 75% thought they did understand their benefits. I don't believe them. I don't think it's that high. And in particular, as we insure more people that are not familiar with the insurance system, I mean, look, you know, I've been insured for a long time, and I don't understand a lot of it. So it's hard stuff. We have looked at CastLight, we looked at Stride, looked at others, but our primary focus is on our health plans, because the way that insureds, I mean, we do outreach and education, introduction to some of the terms when people enroll, but we hold our health plans to account to make sure people understand and use their care appropriately. And every one of our health plans has introductory material, follow-up material, and different points of welcome. One of the things I look forward to our coming evaluation is seeing what difference that makes in utilization. And this is going to be part of the every one of our health plans does, you know, introductions, education about how to use your healthcare system. Which are doing a better job? We don't really know. But we'll be able to know that in a year or two when we start doing the analysis of the data to say, again, back to that diabetic, are diabetics in one plan versus another less apt to get care, and doesn't relate to understanding the benefit or the benefit itself? Okay. Thanks very much. Sir.
Hi, my name is Doug. I'm a fourth-year medical student, also done some work on policy. My question is, in regards to standardized benefits, design seems like a great way to ensure people are getting great care and also combat some discriminatory benefits as well. The issue I think maybe some other states are facing is that they're concerned about getting enough insurers into their exchange. And so given that California has so many people covered under its exchange, it probably has some advantages there. So how much do you think of California standardized benefit design might be transferable to other states?
Yeah, I think it is totally transferable. And you know, a number of states, D.C., basically said, we're going to have a standard design. What are we going to use? Oh, let's use California's. You know, there's a lot of issues that are local in terms of education, communities. Issues of a good benefit design is not a local issue. And it's interesting, I've had a lot of discussions with major national plans, and they said, you know, we've done really well in California, but in other places, we don't want standard designs. We want to keep on playing with our multiple design. And I'm a Missourian. Show me why that's doing a better job for either enrollment or access, and I haven't seen it yet. And this is it's a really important question. We went through a 6-month process to develop these benefit designs 3 years ago with consumer advocates, with actuaries, with clinicians, with health plans, saying, what's the right mix? And one of the things we said at the time was, we don't want to stifle innovation, because this might not be the best benefit design. So if a health plan had a better idea, We said, bring it on, and we might offer it next time. None of them did. So I think one of the challenges that I think for us is how to make sure benefit design doesn't get stuck and not have new ideas come in. But for most of the nation, I'll tell you, I think that the feds, without a doubt, should have a standard design in every one of the federal marketplace states. Does it have to be ours? I don't think it has to be ours, but it should be a lot like ours, because I am convinced, and it needs empirical verification, that if you're a low-income person and you've got a $3,000 deductible before you get coverage for outpatient care, you are not going to get outpatient care to the same rate as if you're getting it covered. Now, I mean, it's a well-duh issue and verified by the RAND Health Insurance Experiment. So the issue of there's no reason this benefit design wouldn't work any place in the nation. And I would know one of the other things that our benefit designs have not been static. So in 2016, this year, we have two silver products. A health plan can offer either a PPO or an HMO. One is more coinsurance, one is more copayment. A little bit. We're getting rid of it next year. We're going to have one silver. So we're making it more standardized. Next year, 2016, we're actually adding caps on specialty drug copays. Now, I'll tell you, I'm really torn about this. This is, you know, I worry about the Sovaldis and Harmonis of the world that cost, you know, $80,000 for a course of treatment. But I don't want someone have to pay their out-of-pocket maximum to get 1 month's course of treatment. So we set in for every one of our health plans, if you're at a silver level, a $250 monthly cap on your out-of-pocket drugs for the most expensive specialty drugs. Now, you know, we've got challenges on how do we address costs, but it's also being patient-centered. That's a standard benefit design for every one of our health plans. Now, I think those sorts of standards are better dealt with as part of a public dialogue than, with all due respect, in the back rooms of a health plan's actuarial factory. Great. Thank you. Sir.
Hi, my name is Stan Williams. I work on tobacco. And one way to reduce health costs is to not get sick. And we've been doing a lot of analysis of short-term changes in medical utilization when you quit smoking. And we found, for example, heart attacks drop by about 15 or 20% within a year. We get reductions in pregnancy complications, all kinds of stuff. Yeah. And so the question I have is, what are you, beyond just pushing smoking cessation, which is a good thing to do but not that effective in terms of populations, what are you doing and doing through the insurers that you work with to push for stronger broad public policies to broadly reduce tobacco control? Yeah. California used to have the best program in the world, and now it's like not so good. It's become soured and toned down. I mean, it seems that should be a key element of the cost containment discussion, and you're talking to a lot of people who have a lot of power who could potentially influence some of the people in the legislature sticking
out the cigarette. Yeah. Well, I totally agree with you, and we aren't doing much. And this is an interesting dance point where the issues of we're an independent entity of the state. I have a 5-member board I report to. We stay careful about getting engaged in legislative or initiative politics. Personally, understand the science behind raising the cost of tobacco being a fabulous thing relative to public health. How we push that through our contract is a delicate matter as opposed to what we push as a matter of our programs like smoking cessation. So a somewhat of a dodge issue where we can't be the answer to all things in all ways, but I agree with you.
Well, I hope you showed a lot of creativity in other ways.
Good enough.
It's a huge, like the modeling we've done, because of the state tobacco program, healthcare costs are about 12 or 13% below what they would have been without it, which is a huge amount.
Mammoth, absolutely. Yep, absolutely. Thanks. And I think it's about once, this will be the last question. Sir?
I'll make it quick. Okay, hi, my name is Brent Fulton. I'm the faculty of the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. And Peter, I have your headline stuck in my head where you said that 9% of covered California enrollees had trouble finding access to to a provider in the local community. But really, network adequacy is a big issue. I was wondering how Covered California is maybe addressing it with respect to, you know, from anything from the basic things of accurate provider directories to when somebody goes to a hospital that's in network, the physicians are out of network. And then finally, are you trying to develop any network adequacy measures so you would have a platinum, gold, silver, bronze network adequacy measure?
A couple things. First, one of the things we've tried to stay away from is repeating what's out there and rather make what's out there better. So there are in California, better than virtually any place in the nation, regulatory network adequacy standards. And there are, and we've partnered with and applauded this, the regulators doing vetting of the directories that plans use, because they aren't just Covered California directories, they are Anthem's directory for employer-based, et cetera, et cetera. And so we've worked very closely with regulators on that. We do our own network adequacy vetting as part of our annual renewal process, look, are there enough doctors, et cetera. And so the big track is to follow the regulatory and bolster that. The piece that we're looking at that I've actually got some trepidation about is when people pick a plan, the number one thing for everyone is cost. 30% or so care about, is there a doctor in a network? And we will be next year having a combined directory. We already provide information on, is your doctor in the network? We're looking at doing, in essence, heat maps of, besides, is your doctor in, how many primary care doctors are there within 5 miles of where you live? And show by heat maps, are there more or less? And one of the things that we want to know more about that is, how informative is that and how important is that to consumers? So it's something we're looking at actively. So when consumers are making a choice, and again, we've done a lot of, looked a lot at the research out there, it is a significant minority, 30-35% care about their doctor, 20% care about a drug, most care about cost. Size of network, it's not clear how important that is. So that's one of the things we want to look at, the science behind that. And we'll be looking at using that as a display potentially in 2017.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.